We had requested them first in July, and so 7 months had passed, and that is why we did threaten to sue, because under the Freedom of Information Act, the time to reply to our request had long expired. But the government did comply. The State Department provided us with these certificates for all recent nominees, not just the three of concern.
Okay, and what did the certificates say? Are any of them competent or any of them incompetent?
Well, we will post them on our website so everyone can find out, unless the government does. We would prefer that the U.S. government itself make these certificates public. We don't see any reason why they should not be public. So we're in negotiations at the moment to ask the government to make them public. We think that would be a great transparency initiative under the president's open government initiative.
And what are the certificates anyways?
They are basically a CV at present, and they could be better documents. So we're actually asking for two things. One, to make them all public in real time so that the American people can see the people's qualifications. And secondly, to make them a better document, to have them address the guidelines that we developed, the four qualifications for being an ambassador.
So, but if they are CVs or maybe glorified CVs, do they tell you, now that you've got them, do they tell you anything more about these nominees that you didn't know before?
Well, they do highlight the big differences between the career people, who also get these, by the way, who have deep backgrounds for this job, and the people who come out of the business world who it needs a little more understanding as to what their qualifications are.
Because there are three in particular, George Tsunis for Norway, Noah Bryson for Argentina, and Colleen Bell for Hungary.
Mm-hmm.
And those three that your association had named specifically is probably need to be questioned a little further, let's put it.
Right.
So do you still feel that way?
We do. We do. It is a dramatic step for us to oppose a president's nominee, and we have not done that. But what we are doing is looking at all the available evidence for their qualifications. We do know what the Foreign Service Act of 1980 states, which is that campaign contributions should not be a factor in a selection of an ambassador. So the fact that they've contributed and raised money for campaigns, it shouldn't be a factor. So we're trying to look at what their qualifications are. That is why we asked for these certificates. And at present, we're still in the process of determining that. In the meantime, we want the government, we're hopeful that the government will adopt some transparency reforms.
Can you give us an example? For example, and I realize you might not have the document at hand, but perhaps you can recall, Colleen Bell for Hungary, what does her certificate of demonstrated competence say about her?
Well, it gives her resume. And by the way, to be clear, she's an impressive person. I'm just not sure what her qualifications for ambassador to Hungary are. However, I mean, she is a television producer in a very cutthroat top industry in Los Angeles. And she has an impressive overall resume, as one could imagine, from a business leader. But we have identified four areas for being an ambassador that we would like to see each nominee have, and she may have some of them, she may not have others, but I think that is why making the certificate A, public, and B, address real qualifications for this particular job would help the public understand and support the president's nominees.
We're speaking with Bob Silverman, the president of the American Foreign Services Association. Foreign Service Association. How often have you taken steps to this degree to at least, let's say, not oppose yet, but look at nominees?
Well, we think this may be a feature going forward, Tom. It's been 21 years since we last publicly opposed a president's nominee, and that was Larry Lawrence, who was the nominee for Switzerland. He was nevertheless later confirmed, although, and he died in Switzerland. He was later disinterred from Arlington Cemetery when it found out that he had misrepresented his service record. And so some of the concerns we had at that time turned out to be accurate. So it is a dramatic step, but it's one we may have to do. It depends on the administration as well. We want to work with the administration. We're not trying to play gotcha. We're trying to make some reforms to the nomination process.
And are you concerned about the relationship that you might have to have with those people should they be confirmed afterwards? What if they end up, you know, one of your association members' bosses?
Right.
I mean, it could be, well, it'd be tough, huh?
That's right. And people have expressed that concern because the great majority of our members are active duty. And here's my answer. I mean, it's a good question. We in the U.S. have a very tough confirmation process. It involves a vote by our legislature, the Senate. And so up until the time the person is confirmed, all kinds of questions are should be allowed. But after the person is confirmed, then yes, that person is the ambassador, and members of our association are professionals and will do everything possible to make that person successful. And let me say, and you talk to U.S. ambassadors who go through this tough confirmation process, it is an authoritative process. Most countries don't have such a process that includes a legislative ratification. So the fact that we have it gives them more authority when they reach their posts. But up to the time that they're confirmed, I think questions should be allowed.
Just by virtue of the fact that you are asking for these certificates to be public, and these are certificates that are presumably given to the senators before the confirmation hearing, it could be seen as sort of an indirect criticism of the hearing process. So let me ask you, do you think the confirmation process works to ferret out those who are highly qualified and toss aside those who are not qualified for their positions?
No. Just like the nomination process, we think the confirmation process can be improved. And yes, you're right, Emily. That's why we're asking for both the Senate in its confirmation and the administration in its nomination to adopt some guidelines, because we think that will make the American public understand why these people are getting these jobs. I mean, we should be clear that business people who meet these qualifications would many times find ambassadors. We're not saying it has to be only career people. People from outside the system can be very successful at it, but they should have qualifications.
So are you leaving out, or are you still holding out the possibility that you could formally oppose them, but you haven't done so yet?
That's right, Tom.
Okay, so it's safe to say the members are looking at these CVs or these certificates of demonstrated competence and kind of making up your mind at this point?
Right, and doing other due diligence measures about the three in question.
And has there been any contact whatsoever, if it's even proper, between the association and the member and the nominees themselves?
Yes, there has. Two of the three came. We had a breakfast. All the ambassadors from overseas came back last week to Washington to have meetings at the State Department for their annual conference. And ambassador designees who are awaiting confirmation participated in. Our association had a breakfast for them, and we met two out of the three and had some discussions, yes.
And how do they seem to you in person? Were they monstrous or, you know, reasonable people?
Well, it's not up to me personally. Our Board of Governors, 28 people, will make a decision down the road, so I don't want to preview that. But, we've all worked in the Foreign Service for many successful non-career ambassadors. They sometimes bring real skills from outside the service to the job, but they're also not so successful ones. So we want to make sure that those who come and serve our country overseas are the most qualified people. We think the president deserves that and the American people deserve that.
Let me ask you, though. I assume that you talked about your proposed guidelines, leadership, understanding high-level policy and operations and so on, with the people you met with. What was their response, particularly with those who are in that holding process, their designees, including the ones that you've had some concerns about? What did they say about your guidelines?
Well, we're meeting this week with the White House about them, so that's the most relevant. And so I want to withhold comment on what their views are until we have that discussion. But we're hopeful that these guidelines are common sense, and they are very broad ones. They do not rule out non-career appointees from meeting them. They were drafted so that they could apply to both career and non-career alike. And we think that's the way to go, to have clear qualifications that anyone can understand and support.
And based on your reading of the certificates that you now have, do you have questions about more than just the three nominees that we've been speaking about?
Personally, as an individual, yes. But I think what our association would do going forward is try to make these reforms apply to future nominees, because they're frankly nominees all the time. We are now looking at who is our next ambassador to Russia. That person has not been nominated or announced yet. Our next ambassador to India will be coming up at some point. So very important nominations are happening. And I should also add, and this is a separate but related problem, there are 50 ambassador nominations right now in the Senate awaiting confirmation. It's a record number for this far into a term. You know, we're over 1 year into President Obama's second term, and 50 nominations are still waiting. So that's roughly a quarter of our ambassadorial nominations worldwide are still waiting confirmation.